Going Linux, Episode 93, Computer America, Number 23. I'm Larry Bushy, the host of Going Linux.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Going Linux is an internet audio program, a podcast, for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows, or just thinking about Going Linux, this audio program will provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use your Linux computer. Our goal is to help make the Linux experience easy for you.
Each month, we publish 3 episodes. We begin the month with a listener feedback episode. In our feedback episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions.
On the third Tuesday of each month, I appear live on the Computer America radio show. We post those episodes, minus the commercials, as Going Linux episodes.
Our user experience episodes appear near the end of each month. In them, we normally take 2 months to explore a topic related to Linux. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts.
During month 2, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for computer users building their confidence and competence with Linux. This is my 23rd appearance on the Computer America radio show from February 16th, 2010.
Broadcasting live, it's America's longest-running national radio talk show on computers, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. Look for Craig's weekly column in your favorite newspaper. This show is being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at computeramerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello, and welcome into the Computer America Show. It's the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, the 16th of February, 2010, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Carrie Holzman.
And hi, Carrie. So how was your weekend?
It was good, good. How was yours?
Actually, quite relaxing.
That's good.
Well, because we really couldn't do anything. We had snow here, and we were basically trapped in.
Why don't we get some more modern movies, you know?
Let's talk about... I could do that. Let's get our guest on. Maybe he can contribute.
Maybe
to
he's
those.
Got some open source movies he
yeah.
can tell us about.
Okay. The Linux operating system continues to be more and more popular, especially in the wake of Microsoft's Vista that came out. Of course, they're gathering speed again with Windows 7, but, you know, is Linux right for you? It's an important operating system, right? So on every third Tuesday of the month, we devote the entire show to the topic of Linux in order to answer your questions like that. And if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. The topic for the month, because I always ask Larry to pick one, and the general topic is going to be antivirus software for Linux.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to talk about. However, that doesn't mean you can't ask other questions about Linux, because it's an open forum for the subject of Linux for both hours tonight here in Computer America. We'll tell you how to get in touch with us. We'll give out the phone numbers. We'll give you the email addresses, all that great stuff when we come back. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Antivirus software for Linux, the topic for this month. We'll come back with all that good stuff right after this. It's 24 minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, and you can reach us one of several ways. We offer several different vectors, if you will, into the Computer America Show. The first and obviously the easiest way to communicate with us is the phone. What you do is just pick it up, give us a call, toll free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-8255. That number will get you on and get you through. You can also send us email. You know, if you want to ask us a question but you don't want to go in the air, it's a great way to do it. We have a special email inbox that we set up when we're live and on the air. And it is, in fact, live, L-I-V-E, at ComputerAmerica.com. And also, you can join us in our Computer America chat room, our add-on chat room that we do. And it's very easy to get into it. Just go over to our homepage at ComputerAmerica.com. On the left-hand side of the screen, you'll see a little place that says chat with us. All right, and that's what we want to do. Just you put in a username. You make that up. That's the name you'll be known by when you go into there. There's an optional password. You don't really need that. That's there only if you want to reserve that name so no one else can take it ever again. But for the most part, you just make up a username. Then you click the little login button there, and your Java-enabled browser, and most are, by the way, on a Windows machine, Mac, Linux, Vista, Windows 7, Snow Leopard, it all works. So we'll move you into the Computer America chat room where our guest tonight for both hours is participating there. He's under the name Going Linux Larry. He's green, as well as his avatar. And he's in the Computer America chat room as we speak. And the topic for this month, and we always have an ongoing topic that kind of the undercurrent of that is for each month, but we'll answer any question you have about Linux that you want. But the topic tonight is going to be antivirus software for Linux. And I guess the first question out of the gate is, you know, the Mac people brag, oh, we don't really need, antivirus software because, it's stable. And maybe the real reason is nobody writes viruses for the Mac anyway. you get that bandied back and forth. Is it the same thing for Linux? No one's writing viruses for Linux? Or, is Linux that susceptible to it? Do you recommend it? You don't recommend it? What?
Well, Linux is probably no more susceptible than a Mac is to viruses and spyware. It's not something that the virus writers, if you want to call them, you want to call them that and be courteous to them, those guys typically aren't writing for the Mac. They're not writing for Linux because, you know, most computers out there are running Windows, and that really means that if they want to spread their viruses, they've got to write the viruses for Windows so that they can proliferate. And that isn't to say that the Mac and Linux are not susceptible to viruses. Someone could write a virus for Linux, could write a virus for the Mac. It's just that there aren't any out there in the wild. And generally speaking, for a Linux user, if you are practicing safe computing on the Internet, you should be less likely to get any sort of infection than someone doing the same sort of thing with Windows. However, there is a school of thought that says that if you are a kind Linux user and using email, you may decide that you want to run antivirus software on your Linux machine so that you do not pass on a Windows virus to your Windows using friends. And by scanning your mail with an antivirus software program before as you're opening your mail or before sending something on, you're less likely to pass on something nasty to your Windows using friends. That's assuming that you have any friends that are using Windows, of course. You know, if all your friends are using Mac or Linux, then maybe you don't have to worry about it.
I see. Well, now, what about, though, the things that don't really depend on the user platform, like when you go surfing on the net and there are things that can affect your computer through Java scripts and what have you. Just by going to a website, you can get your computer infected.
Mm-hmm.
What about things like that?
Yeah, if you're using a version of Java that still has a security hole unplugged, then you're just as susceptible to an attack using that hole in Java, whether you're using Linux or Mac or Windows. So, yes. However, one of the things that Linux does for you is update in the background, if you want it to, the security patches, and typically they're coming out more frequently for Linux than they are for Windows. Not that they aren't being developed more recently for Windows, it's just that you have to wait for Patch Tuesday, unless there's a very bad bug out there, if you're running Windows, to get any security updates. Mm-hmm. And then, it's going to download them to your computer in the background, and then as you go to shut off your computer, it'll make you wait 15-20 minutes while it's installing that before you can go home from work. know, if you're taking your laptop home from work with you. Whereas with Linux, the updates come out as soon as they're available, and that's not on any planned monthly schedule, but rather as they're developed, they're sent out and they update your computer. So there's less likelihood from a timing perspective that you're going to suffer any ill effects from the same hole in cross-platform software when you're using Linux as compared with Windows.
Really?
If for no other reason than the timing of the updates.
Hmm. Do you get security updates and Mac, we get security updates, that type of thing. Do you get those in Linux as well?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Obviously, with Windows security updates, you know it's coming from Microsoft. You get the little shield. Mm-hmm. With Mac, you know that you're getting your security updates from Apple. You know it. It's secure. But since Linux is open source, it's not from any one company. My next question to you after the break is, well, where are these things coming from? Who's doing it? And how do you know that, in fact, you can trust these updates as being real updates and not something somebody else is sending out just to fool you into thinking they're real and could infect your computer? This is Computer America. We're talking about Linux all night long. Be right back. It's 34 minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, the email address, or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Both hours are dedicated to the topic of Linux tonight. Every third Tuesday of the month, we devote the entire show to Linux. Larry Bushy is here with us. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, and he is our Linux correspondent. And the topic is antivirus software for Linux. And just before the break, I asked Larry a question. I said, with Windows, you get a Windows update, and you get the little shield in the lower right-hand system tray or whatever in it, and you know it's coming from Microsoft. You know that the update is a legitimate one. From Apple, you get it through the software update mechanism, and you know that it's coming from Apple. But with Linux, there's no centralized company writing Linux. I mean, it's open source. That's the whole idea of it. So if I get an alert, first of all, where is the alert coming from? How do I know? And how do I know, in fact, that it is a legitimate update, antivirus or security update, as opposed to someone who's just trying to usurp my computer and do something malevolent?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it's based on maybe a misassumption on your part, if that's a word.
Okay.
The assumption is that because Linux is open source and isn't really from one company, there are a number of contributors in the Linux community to the code, the software application itself, that the updates would be coming unvetted from all of those different sources, and that is not the case. Each distribution of Linux has either a set of validated repositories, and possibly even, depending on your distribution, you may have a package manager that includes an updater that points to those repositories of software where those updates are coming from. And those updates, before they're included in the code for the particular distribution of Linux that you are running, they are checked out and made part of the Linux operating system that is the distribution or the flavor of Linux that you're actually using. So it is checked out. It is applied to either the Linux kernel or if it's an update to one of the components. It's checked out by the company. In general, it's a company behind the Linux distribution that you're using.
Okay.
So for example, you get – yeah, go ahead.
So, for example, if I bought my from Red Hat, then I would know – That I paid them a certain amount of money, and for that amount of money, I get some additional things that, such as the different utilities, the different
support,
and of course, primarily support, and that kind of factors in. The updates are part of the support package, and I want to go into more detail on that. But let's say I just got my copy of Linux for free, a free update. It wasn't a distribution. I got it from wherever you download stuff, because you can do that. And it's not – I didn't pay anything for it. I just got a copy of Linux. Then where do I get any updates, or do I not get updates because of that?
You get all of the updates. And when I say all of the updates, I mean all of the updates. There are a couple of distributions that I routinely recommend for people who are new to Linux. One is Ubuntu, and that comes from a company called Canonical. And they don't sell Linux. They sell other services. They sell support, and they sell other software that they make for or they produce for companies. And that's how they earn their money. But with the Linux distribution that comes from Canonical, the Ubuntu and the various flavors of Ubuntu, those are all provided with updates for free as part of the fact that you are using their software. You don't have to pay for the updates. You don't have to pay more to get all of the updates. You don't have to pay anything. You can use it for free. You can get the updates for free. And they come to you as part of the updater that updates not only the Linux software, the operating system, but also the applications that come with the Linux distribution itself.
Well, wait,
same thing for Mint.
Okay, well, yeah, well, then I got another question. I'll tell you what, we're going to break for 60 seconds, and Carrie, I'll bring it back. I got a follow up for that because
sure.
I'm still confused on this. This is the Computer America Show. We're just going to break for 60 seconds. I'll continue on. It's our all Linux show all night. Larry Bushy continues on with us. Antivirus for software for Linux is the topic. Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, the email address, or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. This is the Computer America Show. It's all Linux, both hours. So the topic is antivirus software for Linux tonight. Larry Bushy, creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, continues on with us. And just before the break, Larry was telling – I'd asked him a question about the fact where do the updates come from, and he was good in answering that from the distribution, and then I bandied it back. I said, well, what if it's a different distribution? Do I still get all the updates? And his answer is yes. So I guess my question now, Larry, is are these updates only for the kernel, the Linux kernel itself, and not – I mean, if I'm buying Ubuntu and I have Red Hat, there are a lot of utilities that I'm going to have in one that I'm not going to have in the other. So do these updates affect only the distribution's additions, or does it affect the kernel, or does it affect both?
It affects both. It affects everything that you have acquired as part of that distribution. So if you are using, Ubuntu, or let's take a different example, Linux Mint, for example. That one is based on Ubuntu, and they provide updates on various levels, and you can choose to download updates for any of those levels. Some of them would include kernel updates. Some of them would include updates to the applications that you're using, like your Office Suite or your photo editor or those kinds of things, the applications that come as part of the software that's available in the distribution's repositories. And so all of those updates come from the distributor itself, in this case from Linux Mint in our example, and that updates all the security patches for the kernel, but security patches for those applications as well if they're available.
Well, okay, all right. So, well, are we saying that the kernel, the Linux kernel, is the one unifying piece of code that remains consistent for any distribution, or does the kernel even differ? In other words, if I have a distribution update and I have Red Hat, and the kernel gets updated for Red Hat, but I have Ubuntu, is my kernel really the same? I mean, is it going to matter to me? Is it important to get that kernel update? Are they the same? Is there anything that's unifying between all these distributions other than name Linux? saying?
Yeah, certainly the name Linux, and it's spelled exactly the same from distribution to distribution. But no, joking aside, the kernel is the same. It is the unifying thing between distributions.
Okay.
And there may be different distributions using different versions of the kernel, simply because they've come out, those distributions have come out with releases on different dates. Typically, they try to use the most recent kernel available at the time of release. So if everyone were to release on the same date, they'd all be using the same kernel.
But I guess that I'm saying who – is there some sort of central overview of saying, no, you have to – all of you distribution companies, you got to get your kernels lined up here. otherwise, you know, you might skip a kernel update, do something, and you might miss a version, and then you've got something that's got a hole in it, a kernel with a hole in it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, I see what you're saying, and I think you're worrying too much.
okay.
The kernel is updated by the folks who write the Linux kernel. Okay. And there are a number of contributors to that, of course, but it's really managed and moderated and I'm searching for the word here, but it's
central,
curated.
Some sort of central committee?
Word.
Okay, yeah. Curated, yeah, okay.
Yeah, by a single body of people. And
okay.
So there is one Linux kernel. It's
okay.
Available to every Linux distribution, and
got
they
it.
Get their code from the same place.
Okay, so that means a virus that's going to work on the kernel, it's going to work on any version or distribution because it's really attacking. Viruses for Linux basically attack the kernel and not the surrounding other software that might work with it because I mean, that's what a virus author would try to do then. He would try to attack the kernel, correct?
Probably not, because the kernel is pretty well protected in Linux, and the surrounding software is designed so that it's not going to let you get to the kernel.
Yeah.
It's also designed so that it's very difficult to actually run a virus. It doesn't mean it's difficult to get your updates, because you're getting the updates from a vetted source, a trusted source. And so they will come automatically, they will install automatically. But if you try to open a program or even install a program that isn't coming from the trusted repositories, you have to go through multiple steps to actually get it installed. Not that it's difficult, it's just that you have to be conscious of the fact that you are installing something that can work on your computer. And unlike Windows, where any file that ends in .exe, Windows will try to run it as though it were a program. Whether it's a virus or whether it's something else, it will try to run it. You could take a file with a .deb extension, and if it's not an installer file, that is a deb package, one that is designed to install software, Linux will recognize it for what it is. It will ignore the extension, and it will look at that particular file and say, hey, this is a text file, or this is a script file, or this is something else, and I can't install this. I don't care if it says .deb at the end, or .rpm if you're running Red Hat. It will look at that and go, huh, what are you trying to do here?
Okay.
All right, so we started all this talking about antivirus solutions, and as I understood it, the reason why, if you're running Linux, you would look for an antivirus solution is to simply not be a part of the problem. Even if the viruses aren't intended for you, you may be inadvertently passing them on to people who are vulnerable to these viruses.
That's right.
In this case, your example was Windows users, because Windows users are the ones targeted 99.9% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true of phishing schemes and other types of identity theft schemes. Mm-hmm. However, when it comes to viruses and malware, that is primarily the target overwhelmingly is the Windows platform. Now,
right.
When you talked about the antivirus for Linux, how much choice do you have? Like in the Windows world, it's almost overwhelming. And they all make great claims, but I'm curious if do any of the companies that make their money, like Symantec or McAfee, make their money selling it, do they sell it for Linux or do they offer it for free for Linux? And do you have a lot of choices when it comes to antivirus software for Linux?
Yeah, you have some choices, and after the break, we'll talk about what they are.
I know you have more than one, but the question is, how does it compare to, like, the Windows world? And of those, which one do you think is the best, and why do you think it's the best? So we come back, we'll find the answers to those questions, and yours, if you'd like to call us with a Linux question, 866-606-TALK. We'll be right back. It's It's 54 minutes after the hour. This is the Computer America Show, broadcasting live coast to coast on the business and the lifestyle talk radio networks and around the world through the web at computeramerica.com. This show is dedicated to the topic of Linux, and our guest is
Larry
Bushy.
What is for tonight?
And I guess
at least for tonight. Okay.
I'm sorry, what?
You said this show is dedicated to the topic. I said, well, just the show for tonight is, not the entire show.
Tonight's show. Didn't I say tonight's show?
No, you just said this show.
Sometimes the mouth works slower than the brain. That happens more often than I like.
That's okay.
Tonight's show. Yes. Once a month, we dedicate the Computer America Show to the topic of Linux. Tonight's that night, the third Tuesday of the month. Larry Bushy is our host. He's our guest. He's the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, a free on-demand audio that you can download, listen to on your computer, or put it on your MP3 player, or burn it to a CD, listen to it in your car. It's all free. The RAAA will not come knocking. Well, we all, Computer America Show archives, as well as Larry's show, we encourage you to copy it and share it with your friends and family, just the opposite of the RAAA. And it's all legal, and it's all on the up and up. And before the break, we're talking about what antivirus solutions are available for Linux. So I'm going to shut up now, and Larry, please.
Yeah, for a moment
continue.
There, I thought I was going to have to make more frequent appearances on the show here, dedicating the entire show to Linux. Anyway, I think you were asking me what varieties of, or what selection of antivirus software is available for Linux, and is it free, or is it... Yeah, how do you pick it? Is it free? Do I have to pay for it? All of those sorts of things.
And will it bog your system down like
it
does in Windows?
Yes, that's absolutely a consideration, that's for sure. And
so you have two minutes to answer that question.
Okay, there are a wide variety of them. I have used three of them. We'll include a link in the show notes to an article from Tux Radar where they actually do a comparison of them. I have used AVG Free for Linux, which is very popular for Windows as well, and it did bog down my system, and it was rated last by the folks at Tux Radar. Hmm. Bitdefender was rated number one. And Clam AV, that's one of the ones that's been around since the Unix days, works quite well as well, from what I understand. So lots of selection available.
But now Clam AV is one you have to run manually, at least in the Windows world. It's not something runs all the time. I assume that's the same in Linux, and that's why you won't have any hindrance on system performance, whether it's Windows or Linux. But on the other hand, it's not monitoring, but I guess you wouldn't really need it to. Mm-hmm. In Linux, but on the other hand, that puts the pressure onto the user to remember to do it before they forward that email on, and if they forget, whoops, there's a virus. I'll tell you what, though, not to worry, because we have a whole other hour of Computer America coming up. We can explore the antivirus solutions for Linux.
Emails.
We didn't have to have just the 2 minutes to answer it. We've got a full other hour coming up.
Yeah.
And then, of course, as Craig mentioned, we've got emails. We'll take your questions and your phone calls. If you have a question about Linux, tonight is the night to ask it. Larry is the expert on Linux. He can answer any question you have. No pressure, Larry. Our phone number is toll-free at 866-606-8255. You can email us. The email address is live, L-I-V-E, at computeramerica.com. And you can join us in the chat room at computeramerica.com.
All right, this is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. We continue on our Linux show, as we do every third Tuesday of the month. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at computeramerica.com or chat room at computeramerica.com. We'll be back after your local and national news.
Broadcasting live, it's the only national radio talk show on computers to air every weeknight, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. The first hour's behind us, but there's still more of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at computeramerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK.
or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
And we continue on into hour two on our All Linux Show. We dedicate the third Tuesday every month to the entire topic of Linux. It's an important operating system. Larry Bushy continues on with us. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And we had a caller, but evidently he just hung up.
Oh, what a bummer.
What a bummer.
Call back. We want to talk to you.
Yeah, Charlie listened to us in Park Ridge, Illinois. He had a question.
Come on, Charlie. About chicken out on us.
He wanted to know how to Firefox to work on Ubuntu, and for some reason he got this kind of, hey, Charlie, if you're listening to us, give us a call back. In the meantime, we are...
And I want to say that to anybody who wants to call. We're not like other call-in shows where we're going to keep you on hold for an hour.
No.
We don't do that. We're going to get you on as quickly as we can.
He called during the break, and I told
yeah,
like,
we're going to bring you on first thing as soon as we came back.
Yeah, and I told Kevin to tell him, and he said that he would let him know right after opening, and he did, and then poof, Charlie disappeared. So hopefully he'll call us back. In the meantime,
maybe it was something I said.
It could have been, you know. But
thanks a lot.
So,
thanks for your support.
Anytime, you know, that's what hosts and co-hosts do. So we're gonna go into. I want to make sure that we were all cleared for the. We were going to emails and everything. Was there anything else or any other topics?
Well, we're not done talking about the antivirus solution.
That's right. Okay. All right. So, why don't you pick it up where we were?
Okay.
Well, Larry, before we went to our top of the hour break there, you were talking, right. the AVG was rated the lowest. Bitdefender, you said, was rated the best.
Yeah.
And this was a review by who was the review by?
This was a review by the folks at Tux Radar.
Who are they?
Now, they are a, well, it's how can I explain this? They are a website. They are affiliated with a Linux magazine that is in the UK. And they also run a podcast about Linux and provide feedback and information about Linux computers and Linux applications
so
for the
they
Linux
generally
community.
Generally, yeah, well-respected by the Linux community then as a source for
exactly.
Linux information?
Yes,
hey, gentlemen, Charlie just decided to call back. He heard our
well, right.
So Charlie, who's listening to us in Park Ridge, Illinois, he's listening to us via the Internet, Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hey, Charlie.
Yes, hi.
Oh, you heard us
tell you. I got cut off. I'm sorry.
You got cut off?
Somehow I got disconnected.
Ah, it must have been a virus.
Probably my fault.
Well, we're glad you called back.
Yes,
you have
we
a
are.
Question for Larry?
Yeah, I got a question. I got two internal hard drives on my computer, and
yeah.
One of them I'm running Ubuntu Linux, version 8.04.
Right.
Now, when I open that up and I go to go on the email with Firefox, the only thing that opens up, it says, welcome to Ubuntu 8.04. And when I click something on that site, it states, but the next page will say offline mode. Now, when I'm using the Windows part, my internet is fine. I want to use the internet with Linux.
Sure.
What am I doing wrong?
Well, the same thing could happen to you with any browser on any system. The browser, as it's telling you, is in offline mode. And under Firefox, what you do is go to the File menu with Firefox open. Just find the menu at the top that says File. And then you'll find a link at the very bottom, just before it says Quit. It says Work Offline. If that is checked, it's not going to let you go anywhere on the Internet. It's going to assume that you don't have an Internet connection. So if you click where it says work offline, that will uncheck that box, and then you should be able to get back on the Internet.
Okay, but I would have to go, to be able to get to that Firefox page, I'd have to use Windows to start that, because I can't open anything up with Linux.
I must have misunderstood. So you have Linux installed.
Yes.
On a second hard drive, and you can start Linux, right? You can start Ubuntu and get it up and running.
I can get Linux up and running, and I can get onto Word or one of the programs. Everything
sure.
works fine, but I cannot get on the Internet.
All right. So you can start up Firefox, and it gives you that welcome screen, correct?
It just gives me the, it says, welcome to Ubuntu.
Right.
0.04. It doesn't say anything about Firefox. When I click on Internet to go to the Internet, click Applications, Internet, and then it's got a thing, Firefox, a web browser. Mm-hmm. I click that on, I don't get the website.
So you can't run the browser at all, Charlie? Is that what you're saying? You can't even run Firefox, or can you at least launch Firefox?
Oh, I can't launch it, or I can't run it.
Okay, you can't launch. You can't even launch it,
right.
Larry.
Right.
Okay, well, it could be that it's launching, and that the Firefox browser is saying welcome to Ubuntu, because when you install Ubuntu for the first time, the home page is set to a customized Google search page that says welcome to Ubuntu, whatever version Ubuntu it is.
Correct.
And so I think you are actually using Firefox at that point. If you look at the top of the window that opens up, it should say Mozilla Firefox right in the title bar.
I think it does. But when there's a search where there shows Google there, search, and I go to Yahoo Mail or something like that, it keeps going back to, it says offline mode.
Sure, exactly. So you are launching Firefox, so you've got the browser running. It's just it's not connected to the Internet because the browser thinks you're offline.
Okay.
And the way you tell the browser that you are online is to go to the file menu. Are you at your computer now?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and if you see the Firefox window...
But Windows, I have to open up Linux.
Okay.
If you want me to open up Linux?
Yeah, can you do that?
Sure. Okay, I'll close everything up.
All right.
Yeah, you're in Windows right now, right?
Yes. I'll go to Firefox.
It's going to be the same, but we might as well have them do it live while we're on the air here and give a live demonstration. You know what I hate is what other shows do is other shows will give the listener the supposed answer and then say, well, good luck with that, and move on to the next caller, and never know if the advice they gave was actually useful.
This is great.
So that's what we're going to do here.
I'm a little slower than the young kids. My granddaughters would probably do it like a whiz, you know. Okay, it's going to go. It's going to boot into it now.
Okay.
I sure appreciate this.
Sure.
Oh, that's what we're here for.
Okay. Okay, now I got the either way I can boot. I'm going into Ubuntu. Ubuntu, Ubuntu, whatever the hell it is.
Ubuntu.
Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Ubuntu.
So, Charlie, it sounds like you Linux installed side by side, and you have a choice as to which one to boot
into.
I
got two internal hard drives, C drive and a K drive.
Great.
And my Linux is going on the K drive.
All right.
So it works out. I got 2 terabytes. I just bought the computer.
Wow.
It's
2 terabyte hard drive. That's amazing.
They're 2 single terabyte hard drives.
Hey, Charlie, you change your K drive to an L drive so it matches for Linux. I'm just kidding.
Got to put my user's name on here.
Yep.
Okay. I hope my wife is listening. Okay.
All right.
It's going to open up soon. Come on.
Ah, I hear that.
There it is.
Yeah, up and running.
Okay, now I got applications, places. Okay.
Uh-huh. And then you go to the Internet and then find...
Okay. Yeah, open up Firefox, right? That's what you want them to do?
Okay, I got Firefox web browser.
That's
you want me to click on that?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Double-click on it, actually.
Right.
Whatever it takes
and
to bring that
offline
Firefox
mode.
Exactly.
Yes.
Offline mode.
Yes, right.
So now you
now,
have...
Now listen very carefully to what Larry's about to say, and you got to do it exactly the way he says it.
Okay.
So at the menu bar where it says File, Edit, View, History, you see all that?
Yes.
Okay, click on where it says File.
Okay.
And that should drop down a menu.
Okay.
And at the bottom of the menu, it should say Work Offline.
Yes.
And is that checked?
It's checked.
Yeah, we found it.
So So go down to where it says work offline and click where it's checked there, and that will take it and
uncheck
it back online for you.
That will uncheck it. In other words,
uncheck it. Yep.
And now you'll be able to work online.
Boy,
or you should be.
You should be able to.
Yeah.
Don't be too confident.
Yeah. And we'll
two.
And momentarily, hopefully, we'll hear Charlie's glee as he realizes he can now access things online.
Yeah.
I still got the same. I still got the same welcome.
Okay, and where you normally type in to do a search, or where you type in the website?
Mm-hmm. Type in computeramerica.com and see if it comes up.
Yeah, that's.
Type in computeramerica.com and just see if you can get the website, Charlie.
Okay.
www.computeramerica.com and see if you can see our website.
I'm doing it.
And then if you can, we'll know that you have realized success.
And if he can't, then maybe his network card driver. You know, that was the problem I had with installing Linux.
Oh, it's got offline mode.
Yeah. Offline mode again.
So, yep. So Larry, does that suggest that...
See that click is that work offline?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The check is back on again.
Oh, you need to try selecting it and then pull down the file menu and see if the check went away.
Okay.
Got to work offline and
hey, the check is off.
The check is off now?
Now it's off.
Okay, now put in that website again and see if it happens. Maybe you didn't actually turn it off. Type in computeramerica.com and see if you can get the website.
I'm gonna bet his network card driver is not installed.
Well, if he can't this time, if it comes on again, then we know. At least now we validated that the check went away.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's see if you can get our website, computeramerica.com.
Computer
America, AMERICA.com. Okay. And tell me if you see my smiling face and Carrie's smiling face.
Okay.
What does it say?
Firefox is currently in offline.
Ah, okay. So something else. He selected it for him, but now...
All right.
Okay. And that check mark is back on again.
Okay. All right.
So, well, Larry, am I on the right path here with the diagnosis?
You could quite possibly be.
I'll tell you
All right, we're going to... Yeah, stay on the line, Charlie, because we've got some more diagnosis for you.
Okay. We're going to just take a break, Charlie, and we'll be back. This is the Computer America Show. We've got another caller. We've got more callers coming in, but we'll let Charlie stay on the line. We're going to try to help you out. This is Computer America. We'll be right back. It's our All Linux Show tonight. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Larry Bushy with us. We have on the phone with us Charlie in Park Ridge, Illinois, having some connection issues. Larry is trying to help him, and we're just at the point where he's got Firefox running. Another point that was made is, Charlie, are you doing this – are you have a direct connect or are you going wireless?
This is hardwired.
Okay. Larry?
Now, something changed here. When I went to file and it still had the check mark on work offline, I checked it. But now it does not read that on offline mode. It says address not found. Firefox can't find the server at www.google.com.
Okay.
This has been a change. Then it says the browser could not find the host's server for the provided address.
That means it's not connected.
Well, yeah. It's a little bit changed now since.
Well, and that means that you've taken the browser successfully out of offline mode, which was a problem before, and it probably went into offline mode because you didn't have a connection.
Okay.
So, Charlie, there are a number of different potential causes of this. Perhaps the internet card that you have doesn't have a driver correctly installed, or a number of other possible problems. And
has it ever worked? I just want Charlie. Has it ever worked?
It's never worked.
It's never worked. Okay.
It never worked under Linux, but it does work under Windows.
Right. It works under Windows.
Right.
Okay.
So I'm beginning to suspect that you need to install a driver or find a driver for that particular Ethernet card. So what I would suggest you do is, why don't you send me an email directly,
okay,
and I will guide you through some additional steps to maybe diagnose what this problem is and help you find a driver for your card.
Charlie, you'll have to use Windows to send that email.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I will.
But I accept emails from Windows users as well.
Okay.
So.
I sure appreciate this stuff, guys.
And after you get success, give us a call back or send us an email and let Larry know, let us know how you fared, okay?
Yeah, I listen to you guys all the time.
Well, excellent, Charlie. Listen, thanks so much for listening to us. Take care. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. We got another caller. His name is John. He's listening to us in San Diego, listening on our affiliate out there, radio station KCEO AM 1000, Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hi, John.
Hi, great show tonight.
Thank you.
I've called in a number of times before, and in fact, this is kind of a follow-up to a call that I had made a few weeks ago when Kerry was soloing, having to do with a dual-boot computer and troubleshooting a DVD drive that was giving me some problems.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wanted to ask, first of all, was the is there? I did take Kerry's advice and swap in another DVD drive to try to figure out what was going on. And in Ubuntu, I had the same basic problem where it would not it could read the disk, the DVD disk. It could see the files on there, but it could not copy them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if maybe with this other DVD drive that I put in there, I just didn't have the right hardware drivers, and I didn't know how you would search for new hardware drivers in Ubuntu.
Okay. Well, let me see if I understand the problem. You said that using this DVD drive, you can see the files on the disk,
yeah,
but you can't copy them. How do you know that you can't copy them? What lets you know
that?
Well,
it gives me an error pretty early on.
Uh-huh.
It says error reading drive or something to that effect.
What kind of DVD? This is not a commercial DVD, is it?
Yes, I've tried commercial DVDs.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Well, commercial DVDs basically have digital rights management.
Many
on.
Of them are, but not
yeah.
all of them. And
okay.
you said it is working successfully with the other DVD player, correct?
These
okay.
are two different ones.
Uh-huh.
And they both have the same problem?
Well, yes. In Ubuntu, they have the same problem. In Windows, there is a slightly different problem. But again, it might relate to drivers. I didn't want to get to that just yet. I thought maybe I'd first ask just a general question about hardware drivers in Ubuntu.
Well, John, I'm trying to go to the ground here first, and I'm just trying to determine what kind of DVD this is before we.
I did try several of them, and I did try commercial. Now these are movie DVD discs that I did try.
Okay.
I was just trying to troubleshoot. I wasn't really interested in copying the file.
Oh no, and honestly, I'm just trying to find out where the problem stems from. And
okay.
and if you're trying to do something that has digital rights management on, you're not going to have any luck. And
well, that would make sense.
Yeah, that's. I was going to the heart of the matter first, and then if you're using something that you wrote, these are writable DVDs that you wrote something to, and you can't. Well, then okay, then we're going to move on. But I wanted to ascertain what it is we're trying to copy first.
Well, and that would be another thing to check out. Hey,
yeah,
we're going to
exactly.
take another quick break. Three minutes. We're coming right back.
Yeah,
stand
we'll come back. Yeah, stand in line, John. We'll be right back to you. It's 34 minutes after the hour here in the Computer America Show. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at computeramerica.com. Of course, our chat room at computeramerica.com. Larry Bushy is here with us, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. It's third Tuesday of the month. We're doing All Linux, and on the phone with us, John in San Diego, listening to us on KCEO AM 1000. And Larry, you have a couple of suggestions because he's having trouble copying information from the DVD.
Sure. John, what I would suggest is just to eliminate the possibility that the DVD that you're using has DRM on it, and that may be the cause of the problem. Can you use a CD or a DVD that you know is not a commercial CD, like the Ubuntu CD that you use to install Ubuntu, for example?
See if you can copy
files from that.
Well, yes. Now, when I was troubleshooting it originally, yes, I was able to use a CD without any issue. And of course, the Ubuntu CD is the Ubuntu disk is a CD. Mm-hmm. It was only DVDs that were giving me problems. By the way, I thought of a couple of something that I should mention during the break, and that was the before I transferred this the second DVD drive into the problem computer, I had played one of those commercial discs on another computer, an intact computer that has the identical processor, by the way, same CPU but a different motherboard, and it played it perfectly. And then I transferred that DVD drive into the problem computer, and in Ubuntu, same version, tried to play that disc, and it would not play. And mm-hmm. I was able to play it fine on another computer using the same version of Ubuntu.
Mm. Oh, well, that changes things. Because I was going to say the guy who invented the digital rights management defeater tool,
the kid,
he wanted to watch his movies on Linux. He didn't want to copy them. He just wanted to watch them.
Yeah.
And so in order to do that, he had to write an encryptor, and that's when all the fuss and hubbub and the legal stuff all happened. But it's interesting that you have – what you're telling me, if I understand correctly, is you have two computers both running the same version of Linux, both theoretically with the same DVD drive since you've moved the DVD drive from one computer to the other. One plays it, one doesn't.
Correct.
And it's the same disk.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Now, had you installed any of the codecs that are available, and you may not know them by codecs, but any of the additional packages that are available from the repositories on one or the other of your Ubuntu machines that may have enabled you to play a DVD, for example, on one versus the other? Is there any difference between the two
computers? Well, that's a perfectly valid question, and certainly I did that on the one that plays fine. And mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, but not absolutely positive, that I did so on the problem computer. I believe that when I started having this difficulty, that's exactly what I did. I tried downloading the DVDs, the movie support, into the problem mm-hmm. computer, thinking right. that might resolve it. So that should all be in there, but I'm not 100% positive. I'm just thinking I think I did that.
Right. Well, you know, there are really two possibilities here. One is either it's hardware or it's software.
Yeah, but off the cuff, I'm going with software because you've got two identical systems. I mean, and
you
they're
could
both
try
working.
Changing the data cable for the sake of just swapping the cable.
Kerry, I didn't mention that. I was going to send you an email. I'll still do that. There's some interesting things that happened when I tried changing the cable. Basically, I've ruled it out.
Yeah, okay. I'm going with software. We got a driver missing. You got a driver missing from it. Yeah,
and okay. I think that either that or there's a codec missing that allows the DVD
software.
Still software.
Yeah.
So you know, I think that if you can use the drive to copy files from a CD and you can't from a DVD, then it's a problem with the DVD disc itself.
Well, I tried several discs.
Right, and if you can't play a DVD from one Linux computer and you can from another Linux computer using that drive, I suspect that you need to check on, make sure that you've installed the appropriate codecs.
Okay, I'll do that. I did have another comment. I can make it during the break if you like.
We'll just make for 60 seconds. You can make your comment and then we'll continue on. Just you can hang on there for 60 seconds, okay? This is Computer America. We'll be right back.
It's 40 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Computer America Show on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks. We are broadcasting live coast to coast and around the world through the web at ComputerAmerica.com. This being the third Tuesday of the month, we dedicate the entire show each third Tuesday of the month to the operating system Linux, both with offering information on how to use it, what it's for, why you want to use it, and in this case, support for any problems that you're having. So it's great we're getting some phone calls. We love it when our audience participates. We're doing our best to try and resolve some of these problems. Sometimes the problems are more complicated than we can deal with on a live program, and we'll revert you to contacting Larry directly in email, which may end up being the result of this particular call. John joining us from San Diego, listening to us on KCEO AM 1000. Calling with a couple of questions. And John, you mentioned you had another comment for us.
Yeah, since we're talking about viruses or antivirus, one of the interesting things about Linux is that you can see the partitions or the window partition, from Linux. So it always occurred to me that, well, there should be a Linux program that would let you scan that Windows partition in Linux. That way you could identify maybe some rootkits or such. So I know, Kerry, you've talked about setting up a hard drive on a system and kind of as a slave, I suppose, and then scanning.
Yeah, using a clean Windows bench computer and plugging in an unknown customer's hard drive, pulling it from their system as a D drive, and then letting the clean system scan that D drive. It's much faster than, you know, I could hook it up as USB too, but it's faster if I plug it in directly. And I don't use Linux, so where I get it at a loss is anytime you start asking the Linux things, which is why we just adore and are humbled at the feet of Larry Bushy, our guest this hour from the Going Linux podcast. So Larry,
oh, you flatter me too much.
He does.
Keep it coming.
That's how you get paid here, Larry. So
yeah,
just,
yeah.
Go ahead and cash that check.
I appreciate it. Yeah. And in fact, that's a very good point, and one that many Linux users will use a Linux live CD, which is a CD that you can boot to that runs a Linux distribution, and uses that to fix Windows problems. And there's no reason why you couldn't run Linux from that live CD, install an antivirus program, and then scan the Windows hard drive in its entirety from within the Linux environment. And of course, because Windows viruses cannot infect Linux, no matter how hard they try, you're sure that you are scanning from a safe environment, and whatever it finds, it should be able to clean up. And then, presumably, if you've found them all and cleaned them all, you've got a good, clean Windows system that you can boot from again. So Windows is something that can have these problems, of course, and oftentimes it's Linux that's used by the Linux-savvy professionals to solve the problems that Windows may have.
So, Larry, you're saying that these Linux antivirus programs will scan a Windows partition for Windows viruses?
Sure.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very good.
Absolutely, yes. And, in fact, most of the virus definitions that the Linux antivirus softwares have are the Windows virus definitions, because primarily those are the viruses that are out there. If all they had was the Linux virus definitions, they would be very small programs indeed.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well,
all right, see all the great, get all the good information you pick up here on the show, John.
But can John email you, Larry, for follow up on this whole video copying, DVD copying?
Sure, absolutely. And we didn't give Charlie our email address either. And you can email me.
Yeah, I gave it to him anyway, but you give it out again.
Great.
Go, give it out. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And anyone who's listening can email me directly at goinglinux@gmail.com. And that comes directly to my email inbox, and I will answer your questions via email using that email address.
No, it goes into his deleted file folder.
Don't say that.
Just for clarification, the hardware drivers in Linux, do they automatically install when it detects new hardware?
Yes, they should. And if you have an esoteric hardware, like your DVD drive is one that is very unusual, you may have to go to the manufacturer's site and see if they have a Linux driver, and if they don't, it's very unlikely that there will be a Linux driver for it, because typically those kinds of companies are not very Linux friendly and don't give out their proprietary secrets.
What's interesting about John's issue is that he's tried two different DVD players and has the same result, and yet on another machine running the same version of Linux doesn't have the problem. So that's really where the puzzle becomes interesting. I mean, if I was Dr. House on this issue, this would be one. This would be a patient I would want to take on.
Yeah, exactly. And there are a couple of possibilities that come to mind. But let's take it up on email and let's see if we can solve it for you.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for listening. Okay, keep tuning this in. Okay.
All right, this is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Larry, let's go with a couple of emails there because we were getting close to the end of the show, and I want to see if we can get a couple of those in here, all right?
Sure. Let's Tony
from Cherry Hill, New Jersey, I think is the first one, okay?
Yeah, Tony is oftentimes in our chat room. I don't see him there tonight. He goes by Big Tone in the chat room.
All right.
And he says, "Hi, guys, I need help. I can't get into Computer America's chat." Well, maybe that's why he's not there.
you know, he was here the other day.
Yeah.
He was here yesterday.
So well, maybe we did fix his problem, and he's just not attending tonight. But yeah. he continues in his email. It's saying Java is not installed. I'm running Linux Mint 8. Can I install it through Terminal? If I can, what are the codes? All the best, Tony from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And we've already exchanged quite a few emails with Tony trying to help him resolve his issue. And if he was on just the other night, it sounds like we have resolved his issue. But just for the listeners who may be having the same problem, we have a link in previous show notes. I'll include it in the show notes for here as well for this particular show. On how to get on to the Computer America add-on chat and to how to install the appropriate Java and the Java runtime. And if you will include in the show notes, but it's a fairly short URL, so let me just give it here. It's goinglinux.com/articles/addonchat.html.
That's the one we use.
Yeah,
we use add-on chat.
Exactly.
Chat
so,
Yeah, matter of fact, we're going to have add-on chat. The gentleman who writes it, Chris Dewar, is going to be on the program in March talking about
Excellent.
It. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm in there all the time using Linux. So, Tony, I think his problem was that he had upgraded to a more recent version of Firefox, and it wasn't one that has been released for the Ubuntu version or the Linux Mint version that he was using. So I think he may have downloaded a beta version or it wouldn't have been an alpha version, but it would have been one that may not have worked correctly yet in Linux Mint. They may not have tweaked it properly, and so when he upgraded it using a source outside of the repositories, it may have disabled the Java. And then when I recommended that he go back to the version that's available in the repositories, but that, of course, may have left the Java disabled. And we went back and forth, walked him through how to reinstall the Java runtime, and it would appear, since I haven't heard from him in about a week, and you say that he's been on the chat since then.
He's probably fixed it.
It sounds like he has fixed it, yeah.
Well, we don't know if he was in chat through Windows or Linux, but, you know, what I really enjoy about this is, you know, when I first installed Linux and again and again and I had my problems that I had, I mean, I was just completely dumbfounded with what the next step was going to be to diagnose, to try and repair the problem. And as I hear because a lot of the things when you first come on, you first start talking to us, it just shred over my head. And I'm short anyway, so that doesn't take much. So I'm hoping the listeners glean from this the same thing I am, and that is the more often I hear you talking about the diagnosis, the procedures, the more confident I feel like, gosh, you know, if I try and do this again, I feel like I'm a little bit ahead as far as an idea of what to do next when something goes wrong. So that's what this is all about. We're going to take another break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Larry Bushy continues on with us. We're sort of in our last segment here, and I know we were reading emails, but I don't know if we have time for another one or at this point. I'm looking here. What do you think, Larry? You got a short one here for about a minute, or are they all just too long?
Yeah, we have a real short one from Jonathan who says, "Hello, Larry. I was trying to do some screencasts with GTK Record My Desktop, which I think you use to do some of your screencasts. I'm trying to use a USB mic, and it seems like it's working, but no sound. Do you think you could give me some pointers? Maybe I'm overlooking something. Thanks for your help.
Wait. He's using a mic, and it seems like it's working, but there's no sound. Wait.
Yeah. I don't know how he thinks it's working.
Yeah, I don't know that either.
Yeah, I have had problems with that particular application, GTK Record, my desktop. And what I do to do screencasts is I use that to record the video, and I use Audacity to record the sound and mix them together in a video mixing program. And there are plenty of those available on Linux as well. So that's my solution to that problem. Not ideal, but it is a workaround for a problem application.
Hey, Larry, I got a card that's working fine, but it's not going anywhere. So, so tell me what you're doing. What's coming up next in the Going Linux?
Well, we have another listener feedback and user experience episode coming up, and our next experience episode is one entitled, Computing in the Cloud is the title of the next one. So we have some cloud-based computing topics to cover for our listeners.
It's just so ethereal, you know, computing in the cloud. I love that term. I love that. Just people floating in little clouds of their little laptops.
Yeah, it comes down low enough to the ground, it becomes foggy too.
Exactly. Well, listen, Larry, it's always a pleasure having you here on the show. The 2 hours just fly by, but we love doing the Linux shows. It got great questions, great calls, and all that. And of course, they can just tune in.
All the links. Everything we talked about tonight are on our show notes. If you go to computeramerica.com, click the show notes button. If you missed any part or portion of tonight's show, they're available in our archive section. Again, at computeramerica.com, click on the listen button, and you'll see the last 3 weeks of shows separated by hour, hour one, hour two for each date. And you just right-click on click Save As.
Yeah, and you're done.
On your computer.
Tomorrow night, of course, Wednesday Madness. Your calls, open phone lines. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, is going to be joining us in an hour or two. Larry, again, thanks so much for being with us here tonight. We'll catch you on the next in March, the third Tuesday of the month, okay?
I'll be here.
Okay, that's going to be the 16th of March. All right, we'll see you then. Well, that about wraps it up. Looking forward to Wednesday Madness tomorrow night. And, of course, Dick DiBartolo, always a blast. He has some of the craziest things that he finds on the Internet. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
New music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.
Hey everyone, this is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever wondered how you could help open source? Well, I have a great idea. You can donate your old computer to someone in need and give the gift of Linux. All you need to do is make sure you have Linux installed and running on your old machine and head on over to freelinuxbox.org. Again, that's freelinuxbox.org. And thanks for listening to this great podcast.